And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you. In his new thriller, The Fifth Assassin, Miami resident Brad Meltzer imagines a hunt for a psychopath who's obsessed with following in the footsteps of the four men who successfully killed American presidents. Set in the near future, the copycat plans to take down the president at one of the country's most beloved landmarks. As in Meltzer's other novels, history plays a pivotal role. The subject has always fascinated this best-selling author, who also hosts Brad Meltzer's Decoded, a TV show on the History Channel, which investigates conspiracy theories throughout the centuries. Literary contributor Ariel Gonzalez spoke with Meltzer. He began by asking about the laxness of presidential security in the past.
You know, I can't speak for all of history, but I can tell you at certain points, depending on where you want to draw the past, Abraham Lincoln, no security, right? He had one guy who's a policeman who goes and gets a drink next door as John Wilkes Booth comes into Ford's Theater. That's called really bad, lack security. You can go to fast forward to McKinley, and basically they still don't have the Secret Service guarding the president. They may have the Secret Service, but not guarding the president. It's not until two presidents die that they finally realize, you know what, we need a little more help here. And then even then, after McKinley, they learn, you know what, we probably shouldn't bring him out in these kind of group one-on-one sessions, because he gets killed actually to almost the equivalent of a World's Fair. And a long line is waiting for him, and they're all coming in one by one. And I think for when you look at JFK, it seems safer because he's not touching anyone's hands. And who knew that, you know, there in the book Depository, someone was going to take a long-range shot. So each death, sadly, of course, affects security. Today, though, it's pretty amazing what goes on and what people don't even see. There are things that the government does right now, some of the things you see in the novel, but like penetration testing, where the government goes out, hires its own people to penetrate its own buildings. So they'll take a real-life person. There's a guy right now who has a job. I know who he is. And goes to break into the White House, and he'll have a target. Can you get in? And however he gets in, he tries to penetrate inside, and however he gets in, they kind of close that loop and try and figure out how. So we are constantly, as a government, testing and retesting all of our security on a regular basis, which is, of course, how it should be.
Well, there hasn't been a president assassinated since 50 years.
No, listen, this is why we don't even, like, to me, it's like we don't want to tempt fate, but yeah, it's been a good run. We've had a good run. I mean, Reagan did.
The last attempted assassination was 30 years ago.
No, but that's not, there's actually soon, I mean, it just depends what you count. Bush even said that he was, you know, supposedly poisoned in Germany and wherever he was. Remember?
Really?
Yeah, Bush W. said that. And I think in his memoirs, he said that there was a point where someone they thought poisoned him. And people took there were a number of people. A guy tried to fly an airplane onto the White House when Clinton was president. Someone shot at the White House when Clinton was president. And in fact, it was wild because when I was researching the novel, you know, here I am. It's a novel that's about a serial killer who's recreating the crimes of all the assassins from John Wilkes Booth to Lee Harvey Oswald, right? I make that up. That's total fiction. And as I'm researching the book, the guy who actually took a shot at the Clinton White House when he was driving to D.C. drove down to Dallas and went by the book depository. Apparently went on the tour, someone told me recently. And then he went and stayed at the Hinckley Hilton where John Hinckley shot Ronald Reagan. And here I was researching the book, and I'm like, I made that plot up. And no, I didn't. It was actually happening in real life. There was a guy who was kind of following the footsteps.
Well, you said that your novel imagines an attempt on a fictional president's life and that this would-be assassin is obsessed with the four men who actually did kill American presidents. Most people have heard of Lincoln's killer, John Wilkes Booth, and JFK's killer, Lee Harvey Oswald. What about the other two? Who were they?
Yeah, no, their press agents were not nearly as good as Oswald and as Booth. John Wilkes Booth. But when you look at McKinley's killer, was named Leon Czolgosz, and Garfield's killer was named Charles Guiteau. And both of them, I will say, are equally crazy as Booth was and as Lee Harvey Oswald was. And in fact, one of the things and of course I put this in the book because I love to do the research. I love to show it. And I found out that when Czolgosz was arrested, he shot famously McKinley by using a long line, waiting in line. He has the gun in his hand and he has a handkerchief over his hand to hide the gun. So when he goes to shake the president's hand, it looks like his hand is bandaged or with a handkerchief over it. And then he shoots him through the handkerchief, which catches fire, and everyone starts screaming. But what he does in the jail cell, afterwards, as he keeps taking it, he requests a handkerchief, and he takes it off of his hand. He folds it up, then he unfolds it, and he puts it over his hand again. And then he takes it off, and he folds it up, and then he unfolds it, and he puts it over his hand again. And he's just a whack job, right? I mean, and so to me, when I'm writing the book, usually I'm trying to make up the crazy. That's the fun, right? You got to make it up. With this, I didn't have to, because I can have my character, once I tell the story to that to the readers, when my assassin is basically taking a handkerchief and folding it up and unfolding it and putting it over his hand, you know exactly what he's going to do. And to me, it's the greatest of all Hitchcock quotes, which is, you know, it's not the bang that's scary, it's the anticipation of it.
Right. It's the bomb under the table.
That's it. The Gore Vidal one.
We're speaking with Brad Meltzer about his new novel, The Fifth Assassin. A scene in your novel takes place at Walter Reed's Army Medical Museum. What gruesome exhibits are stored at the museum?
Yeah, you know, the whole novel came from a visit there. It really did. I knew I wanted to do something about assassins, and for years now, better part of a decade, but I couldn't think of the link. And I didn't want to just do it because it sounds cool. You want to actually come up with something that makes sense, and then you'll have a better story. And so a longtime reader said, why don't you come down to the museum in Washington, D.C. that almost nobody knows about? I work there. And I was like, well, what do you have there? And he said to me, well, I have pieces of Abraham Lincoln's skull. We have the bones of John Wilkes Booth. And we have the bullet that actually killed Abraham Lincoln. Would you like to come see it? I was like, yes, I want to come see that, right? You want to go do that. So I went there. And the amazing part was they didn't just have the Lincoln assassination artifacts, but they had pieces from the others as well. So he opened up a drawer for me. And they were all almost as if you took a human skeleton and you just put it in a drawer. There's a big femur and there's arms and legs and everything else, ribs. And I said, what's that? And he said, meet President Garfield. And there was, I guess, the bones of President Garfield in this drawer. Then he pulls up another one.
The president's bones were there?
I don't ask me why. I know he's buried elsewhere.
Yeah.
I can't explain. I don't – but – and I'll explain you why they have all these items because that's actually interesting. And then he opens up another one and there's a jar. And he pulls out a jar with a like a jelly jar with a spongy material in it. And I say, what's that? And he says, that is the brain of Charles Guiteau. You are now holding in your hand. And anyone that gives you a brain is like, to me, the number one person you want to invite to your party, right? I mean, this guy, he has fun. But the reason that the museum has these items is because years ago, back during the Civil War, if someone got shot and you died, they would say, well, why did he die? Why did Ariel die? And they would cut your arm off and they would ship it to this – it was not a museum then. It was a research facility for the Army. And they would say, figure out why he died. Was there a vein in his arm that's so vital that myths you live? They were trying to literally figure out why we die. And sure enough, of course, as time develops, they realize you're not dying. Germ theory develops. And they realize what you're dying from is not a bullet wound because of some lost vein. You're dying because of an infection, blood poisoning. That's why you're dying. And that's why when your arm gets shot, you die. And what they did is they had all these pieces. So they have pieces of Abraham Lincoln's skull. They have the Booth things. They have the Guiteau brain. And the reason that they have it all is because it was for research. And then when the research was basically done and they knew the body part stuff, they didn't know what to do with it. So they said, okay, now instead of a research facility, you're a museum. And the guy said to me, yeah, the Smithsonian got Dorothy's ruby red slippers. We got everyone's body parts.
Well, your new novel, The Fifth Assassin, is a sequel to your last novel, The Inner Circle. Briefly, tell us about The Inner Circle.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, I got a call from the Department of Homeland Security who asked me to come in and brainstorm different ways that terrorists could attack the United States, which was a ridiculous thing to do and really fun and really humbling. But I was struck by why they call me, why an ordinary citizen? And I traced it back through history, and I traced back to George Washington, had his own private spy ring. And he used to use regular people, it was made up of regular people, because all of his top people in the Army kept getting intercepted. Their letters kept getting intercepted, and he said, you know what, give me regular ordinary citizens, because no one will look twice at them. And I said, you know what, wouldn't it be cool if you found out in my next novel that George Washington's spy ring still existed this very day? And the guy in Homeland Security said to me, what makes you think it doesn't? And I said, that's it. That's the plot I want for my book. So the plot for The Inner Circle is simple. George Washington's spy ring still exists to this very day. A young archivist in the National Archives finds out about it, and the greatest secret of the presidency is about to be revealed.
Hmm. This is the interesting moral dilemma posed in your new novel. We know from The Inner Circle that the president, Orson Welles, is a bad man, a murderer. And yet he holds the office of the presidency, which every American is told to respect. So there is that conflict. You have a bad man as president, and someone's after him. And yet the hero feels compelled to save him.
Yeah, no, and you can read The Fifth Assassin on its own. Like, you can, it's a standalone fine, but when you read them together, you see the full moral dilemma, right? Is the main hero hates the president. The president hates him and wants to kill him. And here he is, an assassin's coming, and do you protect someone who you hate? What would you do? And that's what, you know, there's that moment that's, to me, the most important moment in the book where, you know, Beecher says, where they say to him flat out, would you save him? If that bullet is coming, you hate the man. You've spent all your time trying to take this bad president down. Are you really going to save him, or are you kind of rooting for the bad guy? Hmm. And that's what Beecher, for his grown-up moment in this book, has to decide.
It's funny. You talked about Washington's spy ring. It's called the Copper Ring.
Yep.
And I've seen that in other places. A major character in Brian K. Vaughan's graphic novel says Why the Last Man belongs to the Copper Ring, too.
Yeah.
Though she's an African American.
Yes, she is. Well, the Copper Ring doesn't exist. It's funny. When I was writing The Inner Circle, Brian's a dear friend of mine. And so I called him up and I said, listen, I'm doing this book and you have this woman here. I just want to make sure. And he said, go with it. Go with God. I'm not doing anything with her. I never wrote about the Culpring. He just wanted this African-American character, 355. So what he does is just use her. I was far more interested in actually the machinations of how that thing exists. So I do not have a 355. He has 355.
Well, we need to take a break. When we return, we'll continue speaking with best-selling novelist Brad Meltzer. I'm Ariel Gonzalez, and you're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN. Welcome back. I'm Ariel Gonzalez, and this is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN. Our guest today is bestselling novelist Brad Meltzer, whose latest thriller, The Fifth Assassin, is about an attempt on a fictional president's life. At the beginning of your new novel, we learn that the president's best friend, a doctor, Dr. Palmiotti, has faked his death and has gone into hiding. A similar situation took place in your novel, The Book of Fate. There, the president's chief of staff fakes his death and goes into hiding. These men fake their deaths out of loyalty to their presidents. You find this type in government and business, don't you? Toadies who delude themselves into believing that they're members of a great man's family, but they usually learn too late that they're expendable.
Yeah, no, I look at that and immediately think, gosh, I'm ripping myself off terribly in each book. But the truth is, it's a truth of every president and every modern president. When I started looking at presidents and when I researched the books, I want to show you what I don't just go, you know, a president is the easiest character to write a cliche of. All you got to do is have people run around and say, yes, Mr. President, no, Mr. President. And that's not how it is. It doesn't work like that. And what you see in the real White House when you go there is every president has one thing in common. It's amazing when it comes to staff. They all bring one of their best friends with them. And you saw it, you know, George H.W. Bush brought one of his best friends, made him his doctor, which is actually where Palmiotti comes from. It was based on the fact that Bush brought and said, I want my personal doctor here so I have someone to talk to. He's not, you know, that's a really amazing move. And, you know, Reagan brought people he knew, and Bill Clinton brought people he knew. Bruce Lindsay was one of his best friends from Little Rock. W brought people he knew, his best friends from Texas. And of course, Obama does today from Chicago. But what that means is, and it makes, let's just say, complete logical sense, right? If you're going to be the president of the United States, it means thousands of people are politically gunning for you. You want somebody in that White House that you know has your back, right? If you got elected tomorrow, wouldn't you want to take your best friend and be like, listen, man, just watch everyone, watch all my staff because I don't know these people, and make sure no one's stabbing me in the back. And what you find out over and over and over again when I saw that over and over is that it also means to me that there's someone in the White House who also knows the president's darkest secret, because that is also your best friend. They may love you. They may never turn on you. But they were also – the reason you're their best friend is because you can trust them, and that means they saw something somewhere. I'm not saying every president's a murderer and, you know, their best friend's saving it, but in a thriller, that I stole it from reality.
Uh-huh. A major character in your previous novel, The Book of Fate, Nico Hadrian, is a psychopath who attempted to kill the president. Instead of prison, he's sent to St. Elizabeth's Hospital, a real hospital in Washington, D.C. Nico appears again in The Inner Circle and in The Fifth Assassin. You seem to like this character. Why?
Nico is the first character I've ever brought back. And he's, right, he's a killer who wants to kill the president. And he's crazy. He talks to whoever his last victim was. So he literally spends the book talking to the dead first lady who he kills in one of the books. And He's one of my favorite characters I've done. I don't think people realize, everyone thinks the story is about Beecher, and I don't think people realize that the story is also about Nico. And he is just a character that I find fascinating. He's a character that I just feel I understand. I know that sounds silly that I understand the craziest man in the whole book, but I do think Nico speaks one of the truest things that's in all the books, and he says it actually in two of the books in different spots, where he says that the mistakes we make in our lives are mistakes we're going to make over and over and over again, and you don't get out of the cycle of making them until you affirmatively try to break them. And I do think that's what life is about. I look at my own personal life and the moments where I look back and say, man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. It's always the same dumb mistake for the same selfish ego reason. And it's my lesson. I have to learn it. So if you actually look at Nico, there is more truth coming out of the lunatic's mouth than I think anyone realizes.
We're speaking with Brad Meltzer about his new novel, The Fifth Assassin. Reading your novel, I sense this was a much more personal book than some of your other books, because one thing I noticed was that all the major characters have father issues.
Mm.
They're all doing something. They're reacting or acting because of their fathers. And does this have some sort of autobiographical connection?
You know, it's funny. When you put out your first novel, you get your reviews, you take your reviews. Your second novel comes out, you get your reviews, you take your reviews. When my third novel came out, people start reading three of them and they start seeing you, right? They start looking at the whole body of work. And when my third novel came out, someone wrote to me on the internet through our website and said, Brad, I've read three of your books now. What are your issues with your father? And none of the books were about fathers. None of them. Fathers were totally in the background, but someone pulled it out. And I think the truth is as you said, there's, you know, show me a novel and I'll show you what the author's dealing with at the time. My father was dying when this book was being written, and he passed away 2 years ago almost. And that was when I started this book. And no question, even before that, when my mom passed away, this is what I was dealing with. It was my own father issues. And I think I stopped being scared of writing about them. I finally got old enough where I just said, you know what? Why am I hiding it? Embrace what I need to embrace the most, and you'll get the most honest work out of it. I just wouldn't have done that when I was 27 years old. I couldn't have done it. I wouldn't have even talked about it. If you asked me on the air, I would have said, oh, no. I just love writing these things. But the truth is, these characters saved me from more therapy than you realize. And this is when you finish a book, you look at the first draft and you start saying, okay, I know what I put in there. What did I put in that I didn't even realize I was putting in? And when I looked at the first draft of The Fifth Assassin, I went, oh, I get it. Beecher's growing up. That's what this book is about. And of course he's growing up. I had no choice but for this book to be about growing up. My parents were gone. There's no choice but for The Fifth Assassin to be about growing up.
In your acknowledgments, you write that former President George H.W. Bush helped you with the research. How?
Years ago, former President Bush Sr., the dad, H.W. Bush, was kind enough to write me a fan letter, the best fan letter I think I've ever gotten in my life, saying he liked one of my novels called The Millionaires, and would I sign a copy for him? And I was like, sir, you know, you're the leader of the free world. I'll send you a free book. You know, you get a free book for that. And the truth was, we just became friendly, and he's helped me with research on the past three books. This is a book about a serial killer imitating the presidential assassins from Booth to Oswald, right? I can make up whatever I want. But we all know that there are only a few people on this entire planet who know what it's like to live in the White House and know that someone's out there trying to kill them. And so I went to him and I just said, can I ask you about this? And he's been kind enough and honest enough to answer the questions. He just likes the novels, and I respect him very much for his trust, and I take that trust seriously. And his answers helped inform how my president reacts when that scene comes, and how everyone should be really reacting when that scene comes.
We're speaking with Brad Meltzer about his new novel, The Fifth Assassin. Is there an underground tunnel at Camp David?
Camp David. So I will tell you, I've done novels where I've done the secret tunnels below the White House. I've done the labyrinth below the U.S. Capitol. The hardest place I ever had to get into were the secret tunnels in Florida under Disney World. Mickey and Donald and Goofy are nice, but if you cross them, they will make your family disappear in the middle of the night, right? So, but the impenetrable place has been Camp David. And I didn't even know what Camp David was. I know the peace accords were signed there, but what really happens there? And it's really a president's playground. They can play golf, they can skeet shoot, they can, you know, and there's no press. So yes, one of the things I found there is really a tunnel that exists that runs under Camp David. It is real. Where you see it is really where it is. I don't want to ruin chapter, I think it's 97 of the book. But you read chapter 97 of The Fifth Assassin, you'll see where the secret tunnel comes out.
You also write comic books. You've contributed storylines to the Justice League of America, Superman, Batman, and the Green Arrow. Superhero movies are immensely popular. Last year, the top three movies were The Avengers, The Dark Knight Rises, The Amazing Spider-Man. This year, the trend continues. Man of Steel, The Wolverine, Thor 2, Iron Man 3, just keeps going. Why do these characters have such a grip on us?
I think it's – this is not now. This has always happened through history. If you look at the heroes that were popular during the Great Depression, they were Tarzan and they were Flash Gordon. They were characters that – listen, it was called – you know, it was the Great Depression. People wanted to be elsewhere. They wanted escapist literature. And so they wanted to be in the 25th century or in the jungles. And then World War II starts encroaching on our shores and we're scared. Americans are scared. They're terrified. And what comes to save us? A big right, red, and basically blue flag, a character named Superman. And Superman takes off and sells more than anyone. Why? Because we're scared and we want someone to come save us. And if you look after 9/11, when they said there'll be no irony, there'll be no humor anymore, the very first book and movie, I should say, that broke through the public consciousness was Spider-Man. And people forget that. And why? Because we were terrified again as a nation. And I think since 9/11 up until now, we are still that nation that's terrified about someone coming to get us. We want someone to save us. That person is a different person. It's not a Superman anymore. It's a complex Spider-Man. We're a little more vulnerable. And I think that that is absolutely where we are as a planet. I think it's why the Avengers is much more human. I think we do not see ourselves as indestructible anymore. But I think you see over and over that look at any major headline, we are a country still starving for heroes.
But there's been a lot of criticism about the last 20 years of comic books have been very – the so-called dark age.
People always say grim and gritty and Alan Moore made it grim and gritty. And the, you know, the truth is it's just a trend. I mean, what happens is Alan Moore writes a beautiful, wonderful, complex book called The Watchmen. And then the reason – it's not that grim and gritty becomes cool. It's just that everyone wants to rip off The Watchmen. And they think that the ripoff of that is therefore make things grim and gritty. You know, I have people who said to me that, you know, you can look at lots of comics, but I think those trends, truthfully, are a little overstated. I think it's not about – I think it's just about people trying to figure out what sells.
Well, thank you for coming in. We've been speaking with Brad Meltzer.
Ariel Gonzalez is an English professor at Miami-Dade College. He also reviews books in the Miami Herald.